faster. Lower your vibrations. Pull away his arms. Say one of our names. Say your name again.
5, 4, 3.
The team.
Hi, this is Dave Schrader from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. You're listening to 10 Renee Graham.
Thank you so very much.
This is Mike McDowell from the Indiana Ghost Crackers and Chaos Tours saying welcome to
Chaos and get down with the sickness.
Yeah.
Say your name again.
Stop it.
Say it again.
This is Jeff Belanger, and when I'm not out looking for ghosts, haunted places, and weird stuff all over the planet, I'm listening to Paranormal Radio with Renee Graham. I never miss a show, and if you miss a show, I swear I'll haunt you.
Thank you. That's good. Paranormal Radio, taking you beyond the limits. Sundays, 6 to 7 p.m. Central.
Simulcast on SRN Live.
Whispers Estate is one of those places that every ghost hunter wishes they had in their neighborhood. A 3,700 square foot Victorian home, absolutely beautiful. The owner, Jarrett Marshall, had done one hell of a job restoring the place.
This is Keith Age, and you're listening to Dead Speak Radio. This is Keith Age. Be listening to get your chance for the 2012 Mid-South Paranormal Convention tickets right here at Dead Speak Radio.
Hello, all you beautiful people. I hope you enjoyed that. That was Phil playing with the soundboard, playing absolutely random pieces of sound files. I don't even know if we got one complete piece of a sound file, but I guess when you're the producer, you get to do what you want. You heard a little bit about the Mid-South Paranormal Convention. There are so many fabulous conventions that are right around the corner. I know that summertime is a very, very busy time. It's almost like we're gearing up to the knock your socks off Halloween season. Yes, Halloween. I can't wait. But, you know, Mid-South, if you're not there, I mean, really, what the hell's wrong with you? That's going to be August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And I've got some tickets to give away to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention. You're going to see Keith Age, you know, the Booth Brothers, and I have one word to say in addition to those things, and that is orb tones. So the third person that, I know it sounds so really corny, the third person that emails me at deadspeakradio@yahoo.com is going to get ticket. To 3-day pass, folks, to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention. And if that's not enough for you, we have a free, yes, free event at the beautiful and fabulously haunted historic Hannah House in Indianapolis, in Indiana, on August the 11th. Now, this is the 6th annual meet and greet. Teams, psychics, book vendors, I mean, really, the general public, that is going to be the place to be on August the 11th. Come early, get a good spot, and set up your booth. It's open to the public. There's going to be food there, food vendors. And you can also have a tour of the Hannah House. There will be a small donation to go towards towards the upkeep of that beautiful historic location. I realize that, you know, some of the pay-to-play things are under fire recently, but I don't know how else they're going to help keep some of these places alive. Well, without any further ado, I have someone this evening as a guest that I've had the pleasure of meeting and have the pleasure of interviewing several times, and he has agreed to come on the show again. I have some brand new investigations that he's going to share with us, and I would like to welcome author and researcher William Konkoleski. He does want to know, what do you do when your childhood monsters are real? He is the author of the book on his lifelong personal abduction encounters, Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds. Konkoleski's abduction experiences starting at the tender age of two and continued with regularity into adulthood, leading him on a journey of wonder, terror, and discovery, with one foot in the normal world and the other in high strangeness. William Konkoleski is state director of the Michigan chapter of MUFON, and besides doing regular lectures on UFO phenomenon in the Detroit area and being an occasional guest on the paranormal radio circuit, Konkoleski's television experiences include Sci-Fi's Abduction Diaries, ABC's Peter Jennings UFOs, Seeing is Believing, and working as a consultant for History Channel's UFO Hunters. He has also contributed to the books Weird Michigan and Flyers Files. Hey, Bill, are you still with us?
I am. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I enjoy you all the time, whether we're just kind of talking on the phone or working on a show together. Are you liking the really hot weather we're having? Because I am not.
Yeah, I can't decide if it's summer or spring or what. It all depends on the week. It changes every week. I don't know what's going on with this world, Melody.
That it does. It's been a while since I've talked to you, and of course, I've completely forgotten about your organization, MUFON. Can you explain it once again to me, since I'm a naughty scatterbrain?
Sure. MUFON is a UFO investigative organization. We're the biggest civilian research organization with regards to UFOs. Currently about 3,500 members. My home state of Michigan, we got 282, something like that. It was in the 280 range. Sightings just reported to our state organization last year. So,
280 sightings? What?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's just Michigan. And there are many other states out there, just like us, like Pennsylvania. They are in the same range for number of sightings. California, in fact, blows our two states added together away every year with their number of sightings. And we stay on top of them. We investigate them. There are sightings across the whole spectrum. A lot of people just say, I saw a light. It made a right-hand turn really rapidly in the night sky. That's something that we'd like to hear, as well as, of course, some of the more unusual ones that we get, where people have much closer encounters, see things that are a lot more unusual, and sometimes even have entity encounters with their sightings. Those, of course, are the most rare of the ones that we get, but yeah, it doesn't stop. We average about 250 a year just in Michigan, so it keeps you busy.
That's absolutely amazing. If somebody has a UFO sighting or an encounter, how do they get a hold of MUFON, Bill?
The best way is to go to MUFON.com, M-U-F-O-N, of course, it stands for Mutual UFO Network, and there is a sighting link that you can click and input the general details of your sighting, and
okay.
A live investigator will get back with you, almost always in your local area. So you're going to talk to somebody who knows the area that you've had your sighting in most cases.
Before we start talking about some of the investigations that you've been on recently, I am wondering, do you see a trend geographically in the areas that people actually see these sightings? You mentioned that that California has, you know, the most sightings every year. What do you attribute that to?
Population density.
Okay. So they're out there, we're just not seeing it.
It tends to be the case where you have a lot of people, you have a lot of sightings.
Okay.
Some people have speculated that there are sightings that occur specifically at certain times of year, along ley lines, any variety of things. But there is a function on the MUFON.com website where you could punch in and say, you know, hey, show me the last 100 sightings.
Or, okay.
You could really tweak it and say, I want a particular type of sighting in this particular state. And it'll pull up results. And if you do, for example, your home state, whatever they may be,
right,
for whomever's listening, you'll see when you look at the map, what you're really looking at is all of the big cities in your state. There really isn't a time of year for UFO sightings. Well, except for the 4th of July, I do admit we do get more sightings around that.
Now, would that be the beer or the fireworks?
both, I'm sure. So, but the other thing is just, you just see wherever there's people, there's more sightings. And another thing that we see here in Michigan is our major highway through the state is Interstate 75.
Right.
And so you can plot out UFO sightings along Interstate 75. And so there's no real magical place or special time for UFOs, which seems to make sense. They're visiting. Somebody's visiting our world, and they're doing it on a regular basis. They don't take vacations, and they're here all year.
Okay.
And all of them.
It just made me wonder, you know, if there were trends, or, you know, if there were more around water, or more around power lines, or things of that nature. But that does make a lot of sense that they're doing it all the time. So speaking of doing it all the time, you mentioned that there have been two investigations that you've been on recently that have really stuck out in your mind, and I can't wait for you to share those with me.
Sure. I will start off with one that I was invited to participate in from the Indiana Ghost Trackers, specifically Tina Ronan and also Karen Tedderson. They had asked me to do a presentation a while back for their Michiana IGT chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And the presentation I had done was on ways that phenomena tends to overlap. If you look carefully, you can see situations where you have a UFO sighting as well as a Bigfoot sighting, and there's poltergeist activity involved.
Right, we had talked about that before. Back.
And so when they had a particular case that just happened to be in Southwest Michigan, they said, hey, we think, you know, this is right up your alley. We'd like you to join us. So what they had experienced was while they were doing some ghost hunting in a cemetery in Southwest Michigan, which they asked to remain private for the time being while they continued to hunt it. They said that when they were there, in particular this one time in October 2010, they got all sorts of activity on the same night.
Okay.
They were seeing shadow people running around. There was a UFO sighting in the sky, and in fact they were seeing a little creature that they sort of a gnomish creature that one of the things that they thought that it most possibly resembled was the Native American little trickster creature, the Puckwudgie.
Okay.
So, and they had actually hunted the cemetery several times, and every time that they had gone back to it, they had some sort of activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the UFO activity in particular was one of the things that they said, hey, you're a UFO guy. We'd like to have you along for that. And I brought along a good friend of mine, Joe Stewart, who is a crypto hunter.
Okay.
And so we went out there. Now, the activity that they were having in October of 2010, when they had gone and hunted, the UFO sighting in particular, which is, of course, the thing that interested me the most keenly, Tina had said she herself had seen a silver disc in the sky. And as she watched it, it sort of became wavy and disappeared into the night sky. kind of like the cloaking effect that
right.
typical like, on a Star Trek show or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or Predator.
And or Predator. Like a little creature running around amongst the tombstones, just a few feet long, hairy, semi-human looking. And so, you know, everywhere you looked, there was something else unusual going on. They even had some EVP activity.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when my friend Joe and I went to, and met Tina and Karen at the cemetery, we did pick up some EVP activity that night. Joe had brought up some of his equipment as well as Karen and Tina.
Uh-huh.
And the EVP recordings that my friend Joe got were along the lines of, what is that? What do you have? And they were clear enough that I got the chills when I listened to it after the fact.
You're right.
And when we actually went out there, when I was there personally, there wasn't any, we didn't see anything. Though I will say there was this one particular part of the cemetery, actually it was just outside the edge of a bunch of trees that when I went in there, I felt very strange. And I felt almost as if I was going to pass out. It was a really high energy in that particular part of it. And,
okay.
And I was really nervous. I'm like, I got to get out of here. And then only to find out, my friend Joe comes up to me and he says, hey, you know, did you go to this part of the cemetery? Because when I was there, I felt this really high energy going on.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually continue, IGT actually continues to investigate this particular sighting, this particular site, I should say.
Uh-huh.
And definitely the ones that have more of the first-hand experiences, they say that recently Tina told me that they had cleared away a lot of trees at the edge of the cemetery, and the little creature doesn't seem to be too happy about that.
That it really is a very interesting story. And, of course, I'm sitting over here. I'm like a little kid. I've got my mouth hanging open. I'm salivating. I'm sitting on the edge of my chair going, wow, I wish I could have been there too that night. No, that really is very interesting on many, many levels. And, you know, especially the personal experiences, the visual sightings, and then, of course, backed up by some of the EVP that was captured during that visit. Do you have any plans of going back to that particular cemetery, Bill?
Well, at the grace of Tina,
uh-huh.
I might just do that. She definitely has invited Joe and myself out to join them again at some point. And, yeah, I definitely got a vibe there. And being a UFO guy primarily, I don't spend a lot of nights in cemeteries. So for me, that was my first evening in a cemetery where I saw the sun go down, and suddenly I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't see anything. I'm going to trip over a gravestone. This is so, you know, I got chills. So
and the rest of us are rabid over it, and it's, you know, same old, right? You know, okay, you got your stuff. Okay, no problem. Let's go. No, that's
like also Tina did set out a crystal that she said would hopefully be taken and seen as a present from the energy or the little creature that has been seen in the cemetery. And within a few minutes, it had disappeared. So, you know, I don't know what to make of that. But it's very interesting if somebody accepted a gift from us while we were there.
That's actually a fairly common practice, not just with paranormal investigators, but, you know, with a lot of spiritual list type of people, that's done a lot with Native Americans, but also, you know, I've heard some eyewitnesses stories where people were investigating, say, prisons, you know, where they will leave a gift, you know, something that's appropriate for our audience, you know, as you will, and inexplicably, they often do disappear. So that doesn't surprise me at all, and kudos to Tina for thinking of them, really.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, you know, a little bit more about that creature. I've seen some things in some cemeteries that aren't quite like that, but certainly that have given me pause, you know, where there's been other paranormal activity as well. But I guess maybe next time I'm out, I should look to the sky as well. as it seems that I may be remiss and be too busy looking down, as it were, instead of looking skyward.
I've been around the block a few times when it comes to investigating UFO sightings. I have to say, that is a very peculiar place to have a UFO sighting. I can't think of another case that I know personally where the sighting came while in a cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that alone, along with the creature and the shadow people that were seen moving around through the cemetery,
mm-hmm.
you know, a very interesting place to study to see if there's any more places where the different types of phenomena that people generally think of as separate possibly interact.
So you would look forward to communication from any of the paranormal investigators out there that may have also had the trifecta, if you will, of sightings mm-hmm. while they're out ghost hunting. How can they get a hold of you, Bill?
The best way is to visit the Michigan MUFON website, MIMUFON.org, with the MI being from Michigan, and then MUFON, of course, and .org. I also have a personal website as well, which has the same contact information on it. My personal website is more about some of the high strangest things that I've personally encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And that website is experiencer.me.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the word experience and put an R at the end for experiencer, which mm-hmm. is sort of a code name for people who have a number of different experiences, be it ghosts or UFOs, that type of thing. And then .me is the extension on that.
Okay, I didn't know that. So that's sort of like your secret handshake, experiencer? I don't mean to sound like an idiot. I just had no idea, you know, being in sort of a different genre, as it were. So that's cool. I didn't know that. What were you going to say?
The term abductee had really taken prominence for people that had extreme close encounter situations. But over the years, while that term was being used so constantly, the term experiencer sort of bubbled up for people that said, hey, I wasn't really taken, so you can't really say I was abducted. And my experience wasn't that negative.
Okay.
And, you know, certainly abductee has a negative connotation to it. So an alternative term came up to sort of cover both bases of, you know, positive or negative UFO context.
Mm-hmm.
But then it started, the conversation started going around, and I started hearing things that I was unfamiliar with, saying that it was, in fact, the more spiritual, the more ghost hunting type of community, they actually originally use the term experiencer to describe having a number of different paranormal experiences happen to them. And it was sort of adopted by the UFO community and used in this situation. And I say, well, I think it's a good catch-all phrase for anybody that sees something that they can't understand. For me, one of the things I look at and say, okay, I was trained as a UFO guy.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at a lot of experiences that happened to me,
mm-hmm.
had I followed a different path, and one that took me either ghost hunting or creature hunting, there are a lot of experiences that I've had that I categorize as UFO-related,
right.
that I may otherwise categorize, you know, in another situation. And so for me, you really have to say, in a lot of cases, okay, the witness will sometimes, or the investigator will sometimes put particular phenomena into a particular box,
mm-hmm.
but you really can't rush to conclusions. You really can't jump the gun.
Agreed.
It's possible that, you know, with a lot more investigation of it, you know, what happened, that mm-hmm. you might start to look at things differently. So it's a great way of saying, you know, hey, I don't know what the heck happened to me. Something weird. I don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
Experiencer.
Well, I must have been under a rock when all the other ghost guys were talking, you know, about that particular term. But it's certainly, I think what you're saying is more all-encompassing and probably a little more respectful to everybody all around. So, cool. I'll try not to stay under that rock too much longer. Bill, you had also mentioned another very interesting investigation that you recently went out on. Can you share that with me? I'm dying to know.
There was a gentleman that called me. And every time that there's an investigation, they take on a character of themselves, and there's always added drama to any investigation, which makes it all the much more fun, of course. But I had to
that human element, call. Huh? that human element, right?
Mm-hmm. I received a phone call over the summer from a gentleman, and he said, basically, he outlined that he was driving north on an expressway through Michigan and had seen what he said was a pyramid in the sky. Mm-hmm. And he said this was not a triangle, it was an actual pyramid in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And he went over and gave some basic details, which I'll cover again just a second as I get into it, mm-hmm. but so I'm like, a pyramid, that's really unusual, because mm-hmm. I hear triangle stuff
right.
quite a bit. That's very common. So I'm like, okay, I got to call this guy back. Well, what had happened was, right at the time he called me, right afterwards, I had switched over my phone to a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
And right before I did that, what I did was I dumped a lot of my voicemails onto, I had converted them into MP3 and put mm-hmm. them in a separate folder, whatever. And so when I went and I got my new phone, I actually lost the little memory card. And okay. for a while, I thought I had accidentally turned it in with the phone, and I'm like, oh no, you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't have the original voicemail anymore. I get so many voicemails that I convert a lot of them, and then, you know, I just dump the memory. So I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not going to be able to call this guy back.
Mm-hmm.
So about 6 months later, though, I actually find my memory card. I still have it, and so I call the guy back, and after so many months, having not been in touch with this guy and calling it and said, you know, it was a long time ago. You called over the summer and you reported this and mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about it. And he says, oh, wow. He goes, you know, I didn't think anybody would call me back. And he mm-hmm. starts into describing what it was that he had seen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what really impressed me about this was that it had been several months since I had last spoken with him, and yet when he started to talk, he was saying exactly what he had said on the phone several months before. Now, sometimes, although it is rare, we do get people that try to hoax us. They'll just call and they'll
right.
say really strange things and see how we react or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't miss a beat. You could tell this was something that had actually happened to him.
Right.
His memory of it was perfect, and so, yeah, he started right back into it and said exactly the same thing he had said in his voicemail,
mm-hmm.
and which was, he went into detail saying that in 1997, he was driving along an expressway here in Michigan, and I'm still investigating the case, and what he had seen was a pyramid, he said. Well, it started off as a little bit of a glint in the morning sky. It was about 8 a.m., he was in a car with somebody else, and he was going up. Actually, it was U.S. 23 in the area of Ann Arbor. And he saw this little glint, and as he was driving and driving and driving, he got closer to it. And he's like, wow, that little glint in the sky is not moving. It's staying there. And as he got closer, he noticed it started to take shape. And sure enough, it was, as I had mentioned before, a pyramid. And he got fairly close and noticed that there were a bunch of people standing on the side of the road. So he pulls over, and he's standing with them, and they're all watching this thing. And at this point, he's very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that are, it's right over the road, too. And he said it's so big that his comparison of it was to an aircraft carrier.
Wow.
Sometimes people exaggerate size a little bit.
Right.
But when you say something that is that large, you know, okay, you know, maybe it's not the size of an aircraft carrier, but who cares if it's large, if it's that large that
mm-hmm.
you think it's that size.
It was big, whatever it was.
I'm sorry?
It was big, whatever it was.
Yep, and it was covering, he said, the lane, north and southbound lanes of the expressway.
Wow.
And it was mirrored, he said, on each side of this thing, and that it was dark on the base, and there were two bright lights that were shining down right on the US 23. But not only were the sides of this giant pyramid mirrored, but etched in the sides of this mirrored pyramid were hieroglyphics. And so I said, are you talking about, you know, traditional hieroglyphics like a hawk or, you know, some of the things that, and he said, no, he goes, it was just, you know, a written script.
Mm-hmm.
He said he didn't interpret it necessarily as traditional Egyptian mm-hmm. hieroglyphics or anything along those lines, but it was very clearly some type of giant writing etched in all the sides of the pyramid. And all sorts of people, he said, were there that this was actually back at 97, if I didn't already mention it.
Yes.
He decided to sit on it for a while before he told anybody about it. But he said, yeah, there was still traffic driving underneath it, going in both directions. Sometimes people were honking. A lot of people were pulled over to the side of the road, but this thing continued to hover over the road at a pretty good height, but well enough to make out the etchings on the side. And so he said while he was there standing on the side of the road with these other witnesses, the thing was just kind of frozen there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said it started to just tilt, just to turn, just ever so slightly. And he said all hell broke loose. Everybody freaked out because, you know, it's one thing to see this giant thing hovering in the sky, I guess, but to see it start to move,
mm-hmm.
everyone went into sheer panic and disappeared and drove off.
Mm-hmm.
He said while he continued to watch it, as terrified as he still was,
right.
It started to spin faster and faster and faster and started to head south. And after a while, it was twisting around at a pretty good clip. And then he heard two sonic booms and noticed that there were two jet fighters approaching it. And
mm-hmm.
so the thing just shot up straight into the sky at an just absolutely incredible speed. So there was clearly some aircraft dispatched to investigate it, possibly intimidate it or worse, and the thing realized that and made a hasty retreat. He also said that one of the other witnesses there, he had kept in touch with her,
mm-hmm.
and she got back with him and said that there was actually a Washtenaw County sheriff's report that a sheriff had actually witnessed the object and made a report about it. So there is a police report
mm-hmm.
from a police officer that
mm-hmm.
also saw this object. And he said he was able to get me a copy of this report. I haven't yet to see it. But,
mm-hmm.
He said that, you know, with the number of people that have seen this thing, that, you know, there are obviously other witnesses out there probably ready to talk about it. Myself, I went digging through all of MUFON's sighting databases
mm-hmm.
And also looking at the Center for UFO Studies, their database, asking other investigators, and
mm-hmm.
I haven't come up with anybody else who has seen this thing. But yeah, I believe him absolutely 100%. He was a very credible witness. His memory of it was impeccable. And although I caught him off guard when I actually caught up with him, his
right.
story was exactly as he reported it several months before.
That's an amazing story. And, you know, as you were talking, I was wondering if there were other stories about this type of a sighting, you know, in the archives. And you answered that, you know, as you were recanting the tale. Another thing that I was wondering is, has this gentleman drawn out any of those hieroglyphics that he was able to observe on the side?
I asked if he would be able to sketch some of them. He seemed a bit uncertain about that.
Okay.
He seemed shaky on that. I didn't get the vibe that, you know, it was because he was joshing me.
Right.
He wanted to give an exact representation
mm-hmm.
of what he saw if possible
mm-hmm.
and didn't want to just make stuff up and therefore tarnish, you know, the as pure of a sighting report as he could give. I think if somebody was making some sort of hoax, they would say, oh, yeah, I could write it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll just make up some sort of
mm-hmm.
scribble. But but I think he was being very careful in trying to report it as closely as possible. I'm excited to meet him face-to-face. I've only spoken with him by phone. Again, I'm waiting for him to have that additional material before I have the next step of an investigation with him. And I put it out there now because, I mean, if anybody's listening to this program who has seen anything like this, heard of anything like this, I'm very keenly interested in hearing more because as many UFO sightings as I come across on a, you know, I'd say even daily basis, this one is really exceptional. And to have an exceptional witness on mm-hmm. top of that, several exceptional witnesses to this,
mm-hmm.
That's really a rare case, and I'm excited to hear more if anybody has anything to say about it.
And they can contact you through the MUFON site, the Michigan MUFON site, and also mm-hmm. your personal web page, experiencer.me. Mm-hmm.
I have my email, phone, and I'm a pretty easy target if somebody wants to get in touch with me.
And you do get back right away. So Bill doesn't always lose his SIM card. He's usually Johnny on the spot getting back to people, or at least he has been with me. We're going to take a quick break. I want to kind of think about this a little bit. I've got a mental picture in my mind about this ship. I'm going to call it a ship. Don't go away, guys.
Lower your vibrations. Go raise arms.
Say one of our names. Say your name again.
5, 4, 3.
The team.
Seven.
Hi, this is Dave Schrader from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. You're listening to 10 Renee Graham.
Thank you so very much.
This is Mike McDowell from the Indiana Ghost Crackers and Chaos Tours saying welcome to
Chaos and get down with the sickness.
Yeah.
Say your name again.
Stop it.
Say it again.
Hi, this is Jeff Belanger, and when I'm not out looking for ghosts, haunted places, and weird stuff all over the planet, I'm listening to Paranormal Radio with Renee Graham. I never miss a show, and if you miss a show, I swear I'll haunt you.
Thank you.
Deadspeak, Paranormal Radio, taking you beyond the limits, Sundays, 6 to 7 p.m. Central.
Simulcast, I'm SR and live.
Oh, dude, you have got to come see this!
Mid-South Paranormal Convention 2012 is happening August 3rd through the 5th at the Ramada Plaza, 9700 Bluegrass Parkway in Louisville, Kentucky. Come on over and hang out with some of the paranormal's best. Keith H., the Booth Brothers, from Taft, Joe Ginn, Dustin Perry, and Rob Demarest. Supernatural historian and author Troy Taylor. Spiritual medium and investigator Chris Fleming, John Tenney, and Christopher Lean of Paranormal State, The New Class, and many, many others. August 3rd through the 5th at the Ramada Plaza in Louisville, Kentucky. Brought to you by Louisville Ghost Hunter Society and WeAreParanormal.com, the alternative to limitation. Tickets available now at www.louisvillegs.com. That's www.louisvillegs.com. $25 for a day pass, $45 for the entire weekend. Plus, get your chance to attend an overnight investigation of not just one, but two locations in nearby Elizabethtown, the Molson Lodge and Severn Valley Church. Hanging with the paranormal's best, investigating two hotspot paranormal locations, what more could you ask for? All happening August 3rd through the 5th at the Ramada Plaza in Louisville, Kentucky. Man, you cannot miss this.
Programs, events, and listed speaker appearances are subject to change. All sales are fine. No refunds. Additional cost for overnight investigation applies. See www.louisvillegs.com for details.
Dude, get over here and check this thing out!
Hey guys, I just wanted to share something with you. I get the weirdest voicemail. There's this, on my cell phone, I don't even know how she got my number. There's this Babaruga woman that owns this little greasy spoon breakfast place that Phil and I go to. Although I don't know that we're going to go there much longer. I ordered an omelet and I happened to walk past the kitchen and she's got freaking cats sleeping on the stove right next to where she's cooking up my omelet. Needless to say, I didn't need it. Maybe I need to even rethink the coffee. Anyway, I think she's stalking me. She keeps showing up and finding things to do. One time she even pulled up a chair and sat down with me. This was about a year ago. Anyway, listen to this. Tell me what you think.
I'm sorry I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message after the beep.
Hey, Rini. Rini, I hear this Hannah House, this meet and greet this year gonna be on a Saturday. I gonna clear my calendar. I hear this, you know, tell me, I hear you and this Phil guy talking the other day over dinner. It's gonna be at noon until 4, and they say to come early. I think they want me to come early, and they got free things. And it's gonna be meet and greet. The meat, I don't know, maybe they're gonna have goat or lamb, and the grits is that's a southern breakfast, this stuff in a bowl, look like kind of like a dog food, but it's supposed to be good. And they're gonna have free everything, free, anybody gonna come. And the Phil, he was saying something about this psychic, and you know that they welcome, but you know, and I think to myself, Phil, why you say this psychic, they gonna know that they welcome. And then this guy was saying some celebrity, this Kit Edge guy, he's gonna be there. Dale Kazmarek, he from the city Chicago area, he gonna be there. And lots of surprise people, this Wanda Lewis, and they all going to be over there at the Hannah House, and everybody gonna come. I think maybe you should call all your family and your friends, and maybe you gonna check it out and maybe promote it someplace, you know, in the coffee house, and maybe somebody going to overhear like you say I did. But I did not. I was invited in the conversation last year, and I'm going to maybe going to show up this year at the meet and greet, and I'm going to meet and greet the nice people gonna coming out. So I think on Saturday the 11th August, from noon until 4, I'm going to see everybody at the Hannah House. Okay. Rene, I'm going to maybe see you and this Phil guy and these peoples in the coffee house again soon. Okay? And you listen to the show on the Dead Speak Radio, yeah? Okay. I'm going to hear you on the radio. Bye-bye then.
Whispers Estate, Mitchell, Indiana. 3,700 square foot of haunted Victorian home. Where else can you find apparitions of children? Home of the Big Black. Apparitions, 4 graves in the backyard, and a pit of hearts. This is one of the most terrifying places in America. Featured in Ghost Stories 2, Children of the Grave, and other numerous radio and book features. Whispers Estate, every house has a story.
This is Keith Age, and you're listening to Dead Speak Radio.
Hello, all you beautiful people. I would like to welcome back William Konkoleski, author of Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds, and the state director of the Michigan chapter of MUFON. Bill, thanks for suffering through all of our soundtracks there. Interesting character Babaruga is. My goodness, goodness me. Bill, you just shared with us two of your investigations, and I was sitting again on the edge of my seat in rapt attention, and that actually sort of describes how I was when I read your book. I'm a horrible, horrible book whore and book hoarder. I have them piled up all over the house. I drive Phil absolutely bananas. There's books everywhere. I'm always reading something. He tries to talk to me. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And your book was one of the ones that basically when I cracked it open, I don't think I set it down until I was done. I mean, I literally sat down, I read it. If I had to go let the dogs out, the book was under my arm. I'm reading it while they're outside. It's actually sort of pathetic on my part that I'm like that. But I think, too, with your particular book, I was so wrapped and involved in it, not only because of your storytelling technique, and a little while ago when you spoke about the experiencer with the pyramid craft, and his attention to detail and his ability to recount his experience after years, I think that you have the same ability, and you were able to actually take me there to your home when you were a child. And I was wondering if you could share some of the highlights of that book.
And my personal experiences started with me at age two. So a friend of mine who's also an experiencer had recently, a couple of years back, asked me, said, you know, do you ever wish that these experiences that you had never happened? And I said, well, I wouldn't be able to recognize myself.
Right.
Because it's been a lifetime wild ride. I had experiences at age two when a little gray guy came to visit me at my crib. Age four, a handful of them came in and actually took me out of body and tried to teach me what it was like to move around in an out-of-body state. At age seven, I was brought on board and given a scar in a procedure, a scar which I still have.
Mm-hmm.
Experiences at age 9, 10, through my teen years and early 20s, many, many experiences, sometimes several in a week. So this, and it tapered off slightly after my early 20s as I got a little bit older, which for anybody that follows the pattern of abductions will know that that's actually fairly common. But yeah, during, you know, my younger years, it was difficult because on one hand, you know, here I am a normal little kid with my normal kid friends going to school and, you know, eventually getting a job and a girlfriend and this and that and whatever. But on the other hand, there's this completely other existence, completely different set of things that are happening to me on a regular basis that don't fit into the other part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
They are completely on different rails, happening at the same time, and it can really be a difficult ride. And one of the things that I was hoping to do with my book, my first book, is to show for those people who maybe grew up under similar circumstances that they weren't alone, and to parents of children who describe these types of experiences, that, you know, this is what they are going through. To hopefully help parents as well as anybody who's gone through this type of experience know that they're not alone. And, you know, here's the type of things that can happen when a kid is growing up. You know, some of these experiences are pretty traumatic. But in a case like myself, I was able to reconcile with it to a great extent and, you know, get the word out that, hey, you know, this is a big deal. This is something that everybody should hear about. This wasn't my imagination. There are several circumstances in which my experiences, I was not the only person there. There were other witnesses to what was going on with me. And so it's a real deal, and it's something that should be addressed rather than swept under the rug.
As a parent, Bill, what are some flags that children may say or do to sort of clue in the parent to, you know, there's something that's unusual happening here?
A lot of, I would say any single thing that's sort of tagged as a clue may in and of itself not be the smoking gun in terms of, for example, if your child is afraid to go to the doctor, well, you know, there could be very basic reasons for that outside of, you know, something unusual. But if they start to tell of experiences like, oh, my friends came to see me again. My friends, the doctors.
Okay.
A lot of times the friends are described as their friends, the doctors. Or
okay.
If sometimes you have an intuitive feeling that something
yes.
has happened to your child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you ask your child, oh, how was your sleep? Tell me about your dreams. It's going to be a thing where you'll see repeated input from them. They'll tell you again and again about things that have happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, like in my situation growing up as a child, I'll say, this happened to me. And, if my parents, under certain circumstances, which they would do, say, oh, that's a crazy dream. I'm saying, like, nope, that wasn't a dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if a child insists that something is real rather than a dream, I would say, as out of respect for the child,
mm-hmm.
That you don't have to say, oh, I believe you, that was real, per se, but I would not contest that. I wouldn't say, this traumatic experience that you said that you had where these monsters came in, I would just, ask them about it, console them, possibly not address the reality of it directly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a child psychologist.
Right.
I'm only somebody that went through it
mm-hmm.
and can tell you
mm-hmm.
from my experience, having gone through it,
right.
what benefited me and also what would have benefited me in other situations. Anytime somebody says something didn't happen to you and yet you know it happened to you,
mm-hmm.
and people say, oh, that was just a bad dream. And of course you know what a dream is like. You know what a dream is. You know
right.
what the difference is between a dream and reality. And when somebody says that you were dreaming, they suddenly put pressure on you on top of having gone through whatever negative experience that you went through to have to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it adds insult to injury. And that is some of the things that can really be hard on a young psyche.
So what I'm hearing is, as a parent, listen with your heart and be supportive. Don't, quote-unquote, feed the monster, but right. listen to what the child says. And this is going to sound like a really stupid question, and as a parent, I didn't have things like that, from my children. They had dreams, but they weren't, like you were saying, a dream that was real that I tried to pass off as a dream. You know what I mean? What sort of help is, do they contact MUFON? Do you just listen and see what happens? Do you become, as a parent, OCD and start checking their bed 4 times a night? I mean, I guess that's what I would do.
mm-hmm. Now, I've been blessed in that I've only been seeing half of the equation, in that
okay.
I had it happen to me, but haven't had it happened to my own child that I'm aware of. So I would listen. I would say that, sometimes kids do have imaginary friends, obviously, and they sometimes have bad dreams that seem real.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a real clue to it is if how much the child clings to it as
okay.
a real
okay.
scenario, rather than, if you just sort of let it go, say, that sounds terrible, don't say, that was a terrible dream, like, oh, I hear you, whatever. If it's not real, it'll fade, like a dream
mm-hmm.
fades.
Okay.
Like a disbelief fades, it'll go away, it'll dissipate, it'll disappear. But if it's real, the child will have, real memories of it, just like they have real memories of everything else in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll maintain, their stories will remain consistent, and they'll stand up for the reality of it. Contacting MUFON is a possibility because as large of an organization as we are,
mm-hmm.
we do have psychologists involved
mm-hmm.
with our organization, and
mm-hmm.
we're not going to, do anything silly and
right.
say, oh, yes, your child is having, and really blow things up
no.
in a way that is not helpful for anybody
mm-hmm.
because the best thing that you could do to anybody who's having this type of experience is, console them,
mm-hmm.
to make them feel okay, to embrace them, to,
mm-hmm.
to calm them. And that far exceeds the need to investigate what's happening to them, is to make them feel better.
I didn't suggest that or pose that as a question to
I don't know, inflame, you know, or add insult to injury. But just from a paranormal investigator standpoint, you know, you have a child that says they see ghosts. I mean, our options are limited, probably not as limited as they were, you know, 20 years ago. And it was more of a looking for support system or help or, you know, people that would truly listen and maybe be able to network, to get that support. It wasn't anything other than, oh my gosh, you know, how do we help? You know, not how do we pick it apart? But I think you knew that when I asked you that, Bill.
And I'm trying to be clear to the audience rather than to rebuff anything that I thought was, you know, taken in the wrong context or whatever. But I think it's one of the most difficult, if the most difficult thing to do is to handle children who have these types of experiences. And I find that I never say exactly the right thing around all the people all the time.
Okay.
It's the best convey that I understand that the child's psychological well-being is key.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really see, you know, how much addressing it rather than just comforting them and see where things go. You know, there are all sorts of different directions, you know, these experiences that these kids have could go.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that experiences do happen to children,
mm-hmm.
and every bit as much as they happen to adults. It's part of their life as much as it is an adult. And in some cases, you have to say, is it more difficult for the child having these types of experiences, or is it more difficult for the adult? Because when a child has these types of experiences, as I was having them,
mm-hmm.
my world wasn't formed yet.
Right.
You know, I didn't have hard barriers to say, you know, this can't be happening to me because this is impossible. A lot of adults that come to us with their sightings and their
mm-hmm.
Close encounter experiences, they'll come to us and say, you know, I never believed anything like this until it happened to me. And they are having a very hard time about
mm-hmm.
it because it just wasn't anything that they ever thought of. And then suddenly they can't deny it. So, you know, a lot of times I think it may be even more difficult on an adult having a first-time experience than it is a child, but, you know, it's never really easy for anybody, I guess.
So I guess it's a fine line to walk in terms of how to address it. You also mentioned to me, Bill, that you had a very unusual experience that happened to you, a personal experience up on a hill. Would you like to share that?
Yeah, and this is an encounter that I sometimes have shared over the years,
mm-hmm.
out of all the ones, the different things that have happened to me. There's been an update of sorts with this particular one that surprised me. So, thanks for asking about it. Back in 95, actually, I was on a date with a girl. We were at a park that we decided to stay and watch the sun go down on this hill that was fairly secluded part of this piece of property. And then after the sun went down, we decided to, quote-unquote, stargaze. And,
yes.
Laid out a blanket, and we alternated between looking up at the sky and, necking a little bit. And at one point when we were up there, now this is somebody who I had only been dating a couple months,
mm-hmm.
and I've been having these experiences my whole life. And
right.
whenever you're dating somebody, there it has to come to the point where you tell that other person, hey, guess what, you know,
mm-hmm.
here's a lot of the things that have happened to me. But you don't necessarily think it's something that you need to share always on a first date or
right.
or whatever.
Right.
So we hadn't actually, I hadn't breached that subject with her yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was completely unaware of some of the clues and some of the cues that were going on around us when we were at this park. But I knew them very well. So we were laying there on the blanket, and as we were laying there, suddenly everything got very quiet in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, you know, all of the wildlife sounds that were, you know, ambient sounds around us that were very faint but very much there, they disappeared. And we're laying here on the blanket on the ground, and everything gets really quiet, and we stop kissing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that can't be good. And then we hear sounds of footsteps coming up the hill, kind of crunch, crunch, crunch. And so I get up, you know, it's an automatic thing. I just stand up right away, and she stands up, and we go to the center of the hill where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And cautiously looking around, nobody wants to say, hey, did you notice how it got just crazy quiet?
Right.
And how, you know, we heard those footsteps.
Right.
So we're just kind of looking around, and then, then it's kind of still, and to sort of break things up and start conversation back up. The girl I was with looks up and she says, look, it's the Big Dipper. And I said, no, actually, well, that's the Little Dipper. I should know because I just had this astronomy class. And,
right.
You know, there we go. And I'm explaining the sky. And then after a while, we're just, after a few minutes, we're kind of calmed down and everything. So, like, okay, we should go get the blanket and go. So we go back to the blanket. And we kneel down to pick up stuff, but instead of actually going, we lay down on the blanket again.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, we're on the blanket, and then all of a sudden, crunch, 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 there are footsteps coming up the hill again. And I'm like, darn it. I'm like, why didn't we leave? And so we get up, and we go to the center of the hill, and she says, and what's weird is I totally forgot this part, this conversation that we had up on the hill. But she says, oh, look, it's the Big Dipper. And I correct her, and we go through the same cycle of conversation again. And I'm like, this seems really familiar. I'm like, we talked about this before. But it was at that point, it was only a feeling of deja vu.
Right.
And this story is kind of a difficult one to tell.
Yes.
From the perspective of going through it. But so we go and lay back down on the blanket, end up laying down on the blanket again. And then we get up again, and it's that moment when she says, look, there's a Big Dipper. I realize that, oh, my gosh, we've just had this conversation at least three times. And I'm like, this, and all of a sudden, this sheer terror hits me. And then I realize, I'm like, why are we going through this loop here?
Right.
And then when I asked that, my memory, there was a recent memory barrier that had been sort of stuck inside me. Now, this mm-hmm. is not unusual at all for people that have this type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
The entities that come and take you will do things with your memory. A lot of times they'll do a thing where you miss several hours of time or
yes.
possibly less or whatever. But, you know, the missing time experience where you can't figure out what you were doing for a block of time.
Yes.
So at that point, the visualization hit me and the memory that what had happened is that we had that first time we had gone up onto the hill just a few minutes before, the entities had come up, frozen us in place, and there were three of them, and they had gone up to her and said, and they were inspecting her, and they weren't satisfied with her. They were like, oh, no, she's no good for him. No, I don't think so, kind of a thing.
Right.
And then they unfroze us.
Right.
And then and instead of leaving right away, we went through this sort of time loop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand, out of all the things that have ever happened to me, this ranks up there as one of the most difficult ones to try to explain.
Mm-hmm.
So what we ended up doing at that point was, before we went back to the blanket and laid down again, I said, we got to get out of here now.
Right.
And so we grabbed the blanket, and she, and all of a sudden this look in her eyes seemed to awaken something too. And we fled out of that park. We raced out of the park,
mm-hmm.
hopped in the car, and instead of driving back home and parting company, as we would have probably needed to do at that time of the night,
right?
Instead went to a store that was open 24 hours, Meijer, and
mm-hmm.
we went in and went up and down the aisles touching things like brooms and
right.
corn and things like that to ground herself.
That
and
makes
very
sense.
Quickly after that, she broke up with me. And while she never said, we never discussed that particular night
mm-hmm.
again, even when we spoke to each other very quickly afterwards,
mm-hmm.
I think that she very much understood that everything that happened had everything to do with me. And so the recent addition to that was when I was trying to describe this very difficult to tell encounter. Yes. On another talk show. The,
yes.
The host was like, oh, yes, I'm familiar with the time loop. And he had talked about that he had heard several other cases of the same thing. Mm-hmm. That basically what happens is instead of having a block of your memory, what the entities will do is they'll stitch together several minutes of your life and loop them.
Mm-hmm.
So that there isn't a gap of time where you've mm-hmm. forgotten everything, but that you say, yeah, I remember what we were doing. We were talking about stars during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And as time passes after the event, you know, memories get kind of foggy and vague, and all you remember is that you were talking about stars. But having remembered that right immediately after the fact of it having happened allowed me to realize, yes, we are in this little crazy time loop thing. And I had never heard in the following, would have been 10, 17 years, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that was an actual thing that the entities did. And then suddenly I heard, yeah, there's several cases of that same exact thing. So now I know, I guess.
It's fascinating and chilling all at the same time, Bill. And I very much appreciate you sharing that story with us, but realistically, it's more a piece of you that you're sharing. And I think it's very interesting, but very natural to want to go to a safe place with lots of other people. I mean, come on, I've been to Meyer at 4 a.m. There's always people in there. It's brightly lit. And touching things, yeah. To, you know, is this real? Yes, this is real. Is this real? Yes, this is real. Because I think on some level, everything that the two of you had thought was real and solid and good was questioned. And very, very tragic and wonderful all at the same time, if that makes any sense, Bill, the story that you just shared with us. But thank you.
To me, the biggest thing that I walk away from it is, out of everything, is that they take stake in my personal life.
Yes.
Not just on taking me for short periods of time for their purposes, but
mm-hmm.
in the direction my life was taking and who I was going to share it with.
Mm-hmm. Was that something that you were aware of immediately, or was it something that you came to be aware of later?
There was, and I go into this a great deal in the book, the second book that I'm working on.
Yes.
This was by no means my first encounter of being aware of the entity's, opinions of who I was dating at any given time.
Okay.
Why they have such an interest is a chilling question, and some of the evidence I have for that,
mm-hmm.
I guess I'll do my best to lay out in the book, and that story that I just shared now, I gotta mm-hmm. say, out of all the ones that have happened to me, I mean, there's a lot of really strange things that I haven't shared publicly. That one is one of the most difficult ones to try to tell and give some sort of sense of what mm-hmm. was actually happening there at that time. So I hope that I was able to give some sort of impression of the really strange night I was having that night.
Absolutely. And again, I thank you very much for sharing that with us. So Bill's first book, Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds, William Konkoleski. And I very much look forward to reading your second book when you have it published. How can readers order a copy of your first book, Bill?
The best way, I would say, is through Amazon.
Okay.
You could either look up, I would just say type in Experiencer, and it's in books, obviously, so it should be pretty easy to find that way. Or really what I guess I might encourage to do is have people visit my website first, get a bit more information, and then there's a link to the Amazon site from there. So experiencer.me would probably be the best first place to stop, maybe.
Experiencer.me. William Konkoleski.
Yeah.
Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds.
and you're working on your second book. I can't wait for that to come out. And Bill, I very much appreciate you spending your Sunday evening with us, away from your daughter and your wife. Please give them my very best and my thanks for letting me borrow you for a little while this evening.
Well, thank you.
Well, the pleasure is all mine.
Actually, ironically, they headed to Meijer while I popped out for this interview.
Oh, my goodness gracious me. You know, I'm never going to look at Meijer the same way. You know that, right?
Yeah. You better send me a check for having to advertise on your show now.
If they do, I'll share it with you. What do you think about that? Well, thank you so much, Bill. It was a pleasure talking to you. And again, thank you so very much for sharing such a very private piece of you with not only myself, but my listeners. I can't wait to talk to you again. And the rest of you, until we meet again, stay haunted.
This is Keith Hayes. Be listening to get your chance for the 2012 Mid-South Paranormal Convention tickets right here at Dead Speak Radio. This is Keith Age, and you're listening to Dead Speak Radio.
Whispers Estate, Mitchell, Indiana. 3,700 square foot of haunted Victorian home. Where else can you find apparitions of children? Home of the Big Black. Apparitions, four graves in the backyard, and a pit of hearts. This is one of the most terrifying places in America. Featured in Ghost Stories 2, Children of the Grave, and other numerous radio and book features. Whispers Estate, every house has a story.